Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Dustin Pendel, Bob Weber, and Bob Larson. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to have you with us and happy to have you with us listening as well. As always, if you have questions, comments, anything you'd like us to talk about, you can always send us an email at bci@ksu.edu. We've got some listener questions coming up in the next couple of weeks, and we look forward to talking about some of those answers, and always you can send in for information there. We also send out a weekly email blast that has some information both from the podcast and some of the other stuff we're doing. Last week's episode, we talked a little bit about a chart. We try to put some informative charts in there that talk about some of the things that would be useful to you. Today, we're going to talk about first frost coming up and what are some of the things you want to do to prepare, make sure that the cattle are ready. We're also going to talk some about conversations with your lender and what does that look like. Bob, you've been involved in a project looking at how do we try to make those conversations a little bit easier, because that's pretty important. We'll talk about cow culling and how to manage that cow culling situation. And then a little bit about large parts of the country have had some pretty dry weather from late summer into early fall. And how is that going to affect our winter grazing? So as we jump right into some of those this week, I know it's that time of year in different parts of the country. And Bob, you said you'd already had a first frost at your house.
Yeah, that's right. We had late last week. It was 33 here. We had frost on the grass, frost on the pickup windows, the whole nine yards. So, the cool season grass looks all right, but the warm season stuff sure starts changing quite a bit in the last few days. So,
yeah, absolutely. That was it. And these, as the first frost comes in, sometimes it can be a hard killing frost. Sometimes we can get a light frost with a little stuff on the ground. It's kind of hard to tell the effect that it's going to have on the plants and some of the other things. But Bob, I know you've talked some about there are some toxicities we have to worry about.
Yeah, there's a few things that always come up, kind of surprises in the fall, because that first frost often does kind of sneak up on us. But there's several plant species, particularly some of the forages that we plant, such as Sudan and sorghum. Those are susceptible to high either cyanide, prussic acid, or nitrates following a frost. Some of our weeds are also can accumulate toxic levels of those same chemicals after a frost, so shattercane and some other weed type species. And even some of, to a much lesser extent, but even other grasses, oats and other things will get a little bit of a buildup of nitrates and stuff after a frost. And the challenge is, of course, how do you manage around that? And really the danger is for the first few days after those first couple of frosts. And so if you've got cattle out grazing, you need to pull them off of that for a few days and before you let them come back. And also if you're still harvesting, cutting some of the Sudan grass or something like that, that you don't do that until they've had kind of a chance to recover after a frost.
You're saying if you're cutting it for hay, you don't want to cut it the day it frosts or the day after, probably.
That's exactly right, because then you'll preserve those high levels of those toxins. You need to allow the plant to kind of recover and come back. And then once you've had, good killing frost and the plants are completely dead, then the risk goes down much lower.
So sorghum, Sudan, some of the things like shattercane are what you're talking about with some of those toxins, and that can build up. But it's okay to go back. So if we had a hard frost today, if I went in there in a week or so, we'd be fine to graze it?
Yeah. The experts that really look at this say a few days, so 5 to 7 days. So if you're out there after a week, then you should be fine.
The tricky part is this time of year, and Weber doesn't live. Weber probably lives 20 miles from me. We didn't have a frost on that same day. And so at this time of year, you've got to be cautious that you may get a light frost and maybe it's not a killing frost. To know where those plants are, because I know, Bob, we've still got some shattercane and some sorghum that is still as green as it could be. So you can kind of watch there on the plants. The other thing, Bob, that you mentioned, a lot of times we're going into either stubble fields, so that could be corn or soybean, and if it's depending on how it's been harvested, you may not have much in the field, but don't forget edges and waterways.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of times you have things like shatter cane or some of the other stuff. The other one that you mentioned briefly, different toxin, but kind of same principle here, the Johnson grass, and we've talked about that before. Is that something I have to worry about after frost? Or
yeah, yes, it is. That's another concern. And again, it's just interesting that what's going on there is the plant is still alive. So it's still taking up some of these nutrients from the soil. But and those nutrients then are built into nitrates and other chemicals. And used normally in a healthy plant. But when the plant is not dead, so it's still taking up some of those nutrients from the soil, but those cells have been damaged, then they don't go through the complete process of detoxifying some of those nutrients that they're bringing up. So it's really in that, again, so once you've had a good killing frost and the plants are completely dead, they're safe. It's in this time frame when they're actually kind of harmed. So it's a plant that has been harmed by frost, but is not killed.
Yeah. And I think it's something to be aware of. And you would pull if you've got cattle in those areas and at frost, you'd pull the cattle off, wait a few days, and then they can go back on. But you just need to plan to have that contingency pasture to go to. If there's just a little bit in there, do you worry much about it, or does it take much?
It doesn't take much. And that's the real frustrating part is, you know, most of the times you'd probably be fine because they, you know, the cows won't go eat there today when it's dangerous. But that's also why occasionally you'll get
They don't know. They don't know if it's dangerous. I mean, no. I've seen them, they'll put their head in places. They'll eat things that you're like, what in the world are you doing?
So, yeah, if I count on cows of being smart and avoiding the danger, I'll be disappointed.
I'm not sure that's my best plan. Excellent. So watch out for that first frost. And the other thing I will say, so we talked a lot about plant toxicity and other stuff. As it gets to be freezing temperature, it always surprises me. And if you've got the hose hooked up to the hydrant in the yard, it will also freeze. So
that's always a surprise. How did this happen again this year?
It's always a surprise to me. So let's talk and shift gears a little bit. And I want you guys to, I may frame this a little bit differently. There are some folks that I know are good for me that I don't necessarily like to go visit, and not to specifically call out anyone. I like our dentist, but going to the dentist is not a fun thing that I look forward to, even though it's something that I should do and do more frequently. You guys have people like that. And so what I do, here's the thing, I put it off, right? Mm-hmm. I continue to put it off. And it turns out that does not make it better. On a variety of fronts, right? It doesn't make it better. But what we're going to talk about, and Bob, you've been doing a project, we want to talk about building some of those long-term relationships, but not just going to visit when you need to. And we're going to talk about lenders, right? There are several areas in your business that you need to do some of those things. And I know, Weber, you've just done some of this, right?
Yeah, so I was actually taking just a deposit into the bank, and I noticed that our lobby was open. I'm a big fan of the mobile app, you know, make deposits, and but I was driving by and I noticed a bunch of cars parked in the lobby, so I'm just going to whip in and do this in person. And I had a couple other things to take care of at the bank, and while I was there, I did stop. I was sitting in waiting for one of the service folks to help me. Yep, sitting in the lobby, and president of the bank's a local guy that has some ag interests, came out, and we chit-chatted about cattle market and so forth for a while. And when we were done, I made sure to go by and see my loan officer. We've got our house financed there and several other things. And so just check in, say hi, see how things are going, you know, kind of update him on what's going on at our place, and just relationship building, if nothing else. So I didn't have anything I needed. I just wanted to say hi and sort of touch base and make sure that they knew we were still alive. So, and everything was going well.
And Dustin, you think that's the big thing, right? Be proactive in building some of those relationships.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the time to be. I mean, you want to be proactive with your lenders. You want to build those relationships up, especially during the good times, because when times turn, which they will, that's the last, I mean, that's not when you want to start trying to build those relationships, when you're in a financial hard spot. And so open lines of communication, constantly visiting, talking with them, you know, they're an advocate for you. So you got plans, take them in, get some honest input from them, let them see what you're thinking, let them know, learn who you are, let them learn about your operation, let them learn about your philosophy, your operation, your farming philosophy. And so they, yeah, that those open lines of communication, that relationship building is, in my opinion, one of the most important things.
Because no two ranches and no two ranchers are the same. And Bob, I know that's one of the things that you talked about, is different levels of risk tolerance, different levels of plans on how we're going to make this thing work. What have you found out as you've kind of looked into this topic?
Well, we're working on a project where we're looking at working with some producers, looking at and making some expansion or some changes in their operation, and it's going to take capital, right? And one of the pushbacks is, I don't know if my lender will go for this. And it's kind of that avoidance of the hard conversation. And we kind of said, well, we'll go talk to the lenders and see what they're thinking. And the lenders were actually much more open and not as quick to say no as I think some of the producers were concerned. And the lenders said, no, we want to hear your plans. Because again, think about their business. They want to loan money. They want you to succeed long term. And they actually want to have some of these conversations. But it's like a lot of hard conversations that we have in life. It's sometimes the fear of the conversation is much worse than the actual conversation. And sometimes the feedback might be negative, but honestly, it doesn't sting as much as we were afraid it was going to sting. That the banker actually still wants to loan me money. They just want to understand more about my plan, or they want me to consider another factor that may reduce the risk or change it. So it could be a back and forth conversation in that, yeah, it's true that if I just go in and ask for a lot of money from my bank and for them to say yes with no other questions, probably isn't going to happen. But them working with me over several meetings to come up with a really good plan that may be a little bit different than what I came in initially, that might be the outcome of this set of difficult conversations that actually probably weren't nearly as bad as I was concerned about.
But what you said, which I think is really good, is you're creating that, and I'll paraphrase, you're creating that win-win environment. They want to loan you money, but they also want you to be successful. You want to be successful. You need some capital. So to do that, you've got to have some sort of plan for how to, can I just go in there and ask them for money? Or Dustin, do I need to have some sort of plan written out to kind of describe that?
Well, I mean, they probably do like to see a plan of some sort, right? Here's what I want to do. Here's all the prices. The prices are this. Maybe if the prices are going to be a little better, or if the prices are worse, you know, just have some kind of sensitivity analysis around that. Yeah, I mean, you always want to have a plan in place. And that's, again, you get input from them. They can say, no, you're too high. You're too bullish or too bearish on what your prices, input or output prices are going to be. And again, it's that they want to see you succeed, because if you succeed, then they succeed at the end of the day. And so again, it's be proactive and build those long-term relationships. And what I've heard you guys talk about before on past podcasts, of always having this relationship with your veterinarian or your nutritionist or whatever, I don't see it any different here. I think, you know, the ag lender is going to be your strongest advocate on the business side of things. And I think having that relationship with them is important.
Yeah, Dustin, I think you're exactly right. The reality is that, you know, farmers and ranchers are experts at farming and ranching. We're not finance experts. We're not animal nutrition experts. We're not animal health experts. So thinking about, you know, how do you build out a team of, you know, trusted advisors for your business? And let's be honest, you know, many even mid-size agricultural enterprises are pretty good size small businesses, right? And so having somebody that's sitting across the table that's actually on your side and giving you good input about, well, let's, you know, maybe let's restructure part of this lending portfolio into different terms, or, you know, kind of helping manage cash flows, all those sort of things. They're experts at that, right? And having that kind of input can really make your business better and stronger and more profitable ultimately. So having that you know good relationship as with a teammate, and I think that's the right idea, is have them, you know, they're on your team.
And a no or even negative feedback doesn't mean they don't want you to succeed. And it could be an opening. And I've talked to some as well that they look at that as, okay, I'm not saying no for all time. I may not like this particular plan, but maybe there's some revisions that could make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's important. It's again, it's a back and forth conversation. It's not a one-time conversation. And hopefully maybe it's actually unusual that I would come up with a perfect idea that has no flaws. And actually someone else pointing out some areas that I didn't think of is positive. And then we can reformulate and come up with a better plan that, because I don't want to default and the loan or the bank doesn't want me to default. And so there is real value in a kind of a thick skin and really looking at my idea with someone that's going to give me honest feedback.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you feel like somebody pointing out flaws in your ideas is a positive.
Because you've got a couple ideas there.
Well, now that we can open it up and really start talking. So we'll do some ideas later and we'll provide feedback. Just remember, it's a positive, Bob.
I think the other real valuable piece is that, you know, the guy sitting across the desk, the lender or gal, she's had the same conversation likely with 15 other farmers or ranchers. And in that process has probably gotten some perspective and ideas on things that are working for other people, other new strategies that you might deploy. And so, you know, you get the benefit of leaning on their experience too. It's not just your operation, right? They have vision across a whole number of operations that are in their lending portfolio. And that can be a real advantage.
Absolutely. Use their expertise. And that leads us right to our Cattle Chat checklist for this week, which are top strategies to use when talking to your lender.
Number 6, know your tolerance for risk.
Number 5, have a good understanding of your current financial position.
Number 4, create a good arrangement, one that's positive for both you and your lender.
Number 3, don't be afraid to ask for what you want or need.
Number 2, respond to criticism. Feedback isn't always negative.
And number 1, be proactive. Develop a long-term relationship with open lines of communication.
And that's our BCI Cattle Chat checklist for this week. We talked about first frost earlier. First frost is often followed not far behind for our spring calvers by weaning and time to pregnancy test, which leads to potentially some cold cows. And cold cows generate a significant chunk of the income for many of our cow-calf operations. And so, Dustin, I want to start with you. As we think about let's just start by talking about the cold cow market. And when do most people sell cold cows and when do fewer people sell cold cows?
Yeah, so just I pulled the cold cow prices here and just did a quick graph. And it looks like, you know, for the last 4 years, going back to January of 2016, that March, April, May, even early June, that's the time when the cold cow prices are the highest. And then if you take a look, you know, October, November, that's roughly when December, when those prices are going to be the lowest. So that'll tell you when, as a producer, you need to start think through, do I cull those cows after I've done the pregnancy check? Or do I hold on to them maybe over the winter? Which again, it's going to add additional feed costs, but prices might be higher. So that's when you're going to sit down with a pen and paper or pencil and paper and just kind of work through that math and see if it makes sense to hold those cows over the winter when you might be able to receive a higher price, or do you just get rid of them right away?
So when it's similar to when we talk about the feeder calf market, right? So am I going to hold those feeder calves until the market's better? Well, that's not cost-free. There's the cost, of course, of feed, but there's also the cost of that capital that I've got tied up in those animals. So it's just like, I mean, we call them livestock because they're like a stock. Are they going to continue to have some return on that investment over that period of time? Or are they just going to add costs over that period? And Bob, I know you've looked into both Bobs. You guys have both looked into this some. What are your thoughts on, and let me just phrase it as we've got some calls and we're not going to necessarily address, so they may be open, they may have other issues, but let's say they're relatively healthy calls. Keep them or sell them right away?
I like what Dustin said is you got to know your costs and your benefits. The benefit is a lot of times these cows, if they're a little bit thin particularly, they're pretty efficient at gaining weight. And so if I've got enough feedstuffs, I've got, you know, a place to put them or a place to use some relatively inexpensive feeds, they might be some of my more efficient gains. And if I can be putting weight on them at the same time that the market is kind of going in my favor, that the price is going up, that can be a real win-win. The negative, of course, is I've got extra animals around. You know, I've got enough stuff to do, and maybe I'm a little short of feed this winter or whatever else. So I would just say you should consider keeping those cold cows around and putting weight on them, but you need to get out the pen and paper and see if it's going
to
really.
And you'd have to have enough to make that worthwhile. Yeah, back to your labor concern, right?
If I've got a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not going to do that for a couple of head probably. But yeah.
Weber.
Yeah. Go ahead. Bob's strategy is good. You've got to look at, you know, what the costs and returns are. But remember that for, you know, many cow calf operations, somewhere 20 to 25% of net income, or gross income rather, comes from cull cows. And so, you know, making a smart marketing decision relative to the that revenue stream can be important, right? So think through, you know, if you've got 20 or 30 cull cows, you know, the amount of money you might potentially garner by, you know, capitalizing on this excellent feed conversion of those cows, and, you know, deferring the marketing till after the first of the year, you know, may have some tax advantage, right? So you pay for those feed costs, in the current year, realize the revenue in the following year. So don't underestimate the impact of taxes. But also, you know, the increased value, right? So one of the things that's awesome about feeding cows typically is not only do you increase sale weight, you increase the value of the sale weight. So you roll them up in terms of price. And you, if you sell them at the right time, the third advantage is increased market price as well. So you've changed the sort of classification of the animal in terms of, you know, slaughter cow value by feeding them for a while. So, you know, don't underestimate that. And it can be, you know, $200-$300 a head, pretty easy change in net revenue on those cows. So
follow-up question for all three of you. I've got cull cows. I think I'm going to keep them. I'm going to feed them. Some are young, some are middle-aged, some are old. Put a bowl with them, yes or no?
Yes. I like the idea. Yeah. In that, you know, generally, pregnant cows are worth more than open cows. Now I'm going to have to own them long enough to get them pregnant and determine that they're pregnant to really get that marketing advantage. So again, the timing is going to be important to whether that's a good idea or not.
But if I'm keeping them through the winter, throw a bowl with them. And if some of them turn out pregnant, some is more than none, right? So it doesn't have to be all, they don't have to have a 90% breed up rate. They're my culls and they may fit with somebody's herd. So excellent. Yes. I think that's a good approach. And I'll go back to Dustin. I think the very first thing you said is key. Do the math for your operation and what works for you on whether or not to keep those or sell them, because we all have cull cows. And speaking of managing through winter, we here locally and in a broader area through the Midwest have been pretty darn dry. How does that affect your plans for winter grazing, winter feeding?
Yeah, I think one of the real things to think about here is do a good inventory of what feedstuffs you've got available, right? We know this is a really critical time for particularly spring calf cows as we come out of kind of the weaning period. And certainly if you're in a dry area and you haven't weaned yet, maybe accelerate that a little bit to get that nutritional demand off of cows so you don't have to feed body condition score back onto those females before calving. But having a good inventory of what you've got going into winter early on may help you take advantage of some opportunities to buy feed or hay, or you know, make some real strategic culling decisions relative to, you know, some older cows or deferring expansion or replacement heifer retention to decrease the nutrient demand on your ranch as a strategy. So,
Dustin, what are your thoughts? Anything specific you'd think about going into winter?
I'm not sure I'd add much more to what Bob just said. Is A, you need to know what you have. And that's relative to thinking about the culling strategies that we just talked about. I mean, you're going to have to, if you have to purchase more feed or if it's going to be more expensive, should you hold on to those calves and cows or should you maybe possibly cull? And so I think understanding, again, your situation.
The other thing I've seen people do that I think is useful, it's easy not to do is, but we take an inventory and maybe even it's a walking around in your head inventory of where the feedstuffs are, but then you revise that as you go, okay, I think this will get me through till spring. And then you look at it again in November and December and January and you say, geez, I'm going through this a lot faster than I thought I was, because most of us make our decisions on when am I going to feed more is when are we out of the other stuff? And if they seem to be going through it faster, then they don't have as much other supplemental material out there. So you may change your decision. Excellent. Well, we appreciate you joining us today and always happy to have your feedback. If you would like to get in touch with us or send us an idea or a question that you'd like us to talk about, send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.